Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. The last 4 weeks with Trump in office has been quite a whirlwind. With all that's happening, it seems like he's been in office longer, but it's only been just under a month. What's happening right now in America is not just a political movement, it's a cultural revolution. Americans who hold to traditional moral values are revolting against the left's belief in transgenderism, racism, DEI, men and women's sports, the global warming scam, endless government spending and programs, open borders, judicial lawfare, etc. The political right has gotten the political upper hand, and they're using it to unravel the leftist policies implemented over the past 20 years. Here's just one example of hundreds. Over the weekend, Trump announced that he was removing several members of the Washington, D.C. Kennedy Center Board. And if needed, he's going to make himself the chairman. Since the Kennedy Center operates under the White House, this is in Trump's executive powers. Why did Trump do this? Because he explained that the center has been hosting drag queen shows targeting children. And this must stop. We must have a new board that supports a golden age in arts and culture. So the first person to go is the current chairman of the Kennedy Center, David Rubenstein, appointed by President Biden. Is Trump doing the right thing? Well, given what the scripture teaches about the role of civic leaders, absolutely. Romans chapter 13, civil magistrates are to be ministers of God, avengers who bring wrath on the ones who practice evil. And we just haven't seen this in generations. Because the prevailing philosophy, even among conservative leaders, has been pluralism and a type of democratic moral equivalency and ambiguity. But all effective biblical moral reformers reject that philosophy because right is right and wrong is wrong. And righteousness must stand up for what is right, regardless of the consequences, whether or not we ever win an election again. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 26, like a trampled spring and a polluted well is a righteous man who gives way before the wicked. Well, there's still opposition to Donald Trump in some evangelical circles, usually from leftist evangelicals who support transgenderism and abortion and believe that the goal of Christians is to make nice with the world. This last week, Wheaton College, the once premier Christian institution in Illinois, posted a congratulations to one of their graduates, Russell Vaught, for being Trump's appointee to the White House Director of Management and Budget. It caused such an outcry on campus that the college had to retract the congratulations. Wheaton posted this response on Friday. Wheaton College posted a congratulations and a call to prayer for an alumnus who received confirmation to the White House post. The recognition and prayer is something we would typically do for any graduate who has reached that level of government. However, the political situation surrounding the appointment led to a significant concern expressed online. It was not our intention to embroil the college in a political discussion or dispute. Our institutional and theological commitments are clear that the college as a nonprofit institution does not make political endorsements. Wheaton College's focus is on Christ and his kingdom, unquote. You know, one would imagine that all the Christians at Wheaton would be thrilled that a righteous man becomes the director of management and budget. Maybe he can help weed out the financial corruption. But Wheaton has been taken over by the left and has become woke. The school now supports transgender student organizations. Students and faculty are not allowed to say words such as servant or mankind because they're politically incorrect. There is a religion of lawlessness and humanism that masquerades under the guise of Christianity. in the early church, it was called the error of Gnosticism. So anyway, the first group of professing evangelicals who despise Trump and his administration is usually because they consider him too righteous. However, there's another group that despises Trump because, in their estimation, he's not righteous enough. They see the ungodliness in the conservative camp. They see secular semi-conservatives like Elon Musk and Vivek and people like Joe Rogan. And so they believe that Trump winning is actually the left winning, that the political left and right are all the same. It's all just the world. Well, you know, I'm really glad for those Christians who are able to see some of the faults and some of the godless motivations in the conservative movement. But the ideological right is not the same as the ideological left. A belief in natural law matters. It's no small thing. Trump and the Republicans are working to return America to the concept of natural law, the law of nature, nature's God. And that is not a support of Satan's kingdom. That's an assault on Satan's kingdom. Natural law threatens Satan's agenda. Luke chapter 11. But Jesus knew their thoughts and said to them, "Any kingdom divided against itself is laid waste, and a house divided against itself falls. If Satan also is divided against himself, how will his kingdom stand? For you say that I cast out demons by Beelzebub." And also some today are claiming that Trump's pushback against transgenderism, DEI, globalism, abortion, is actually a ploy of the devil. He's actually setting up America for evil. To which I would say, stop overthinking this, as if Donald Trump is some sort of double agent. Of course, Donald Trump and the people he surrounds him with, most of whom are Christian in their worldview, they're not perfect. But that is the condition of all social reforms throughout history. You know, I really don't believe that Satan is rejoicing that his lawless, immoral agenda is being unraveled. You know, Satan may try to use some of the unraveling to his own ends, but the unraveling is a righteousness that he would rather not have. Any return to natural law in America is good. But of course, as Christians, we know this is not enough. It's also incumbent upon Christians to now double down on evangelism. Well, that was all by way of introduction. The subject for this week's program is to focus on just one of Trump's reforms. For the next few weeks, I'm going to take each program to cover one reform. And the reform for this week is financial reform, rooting out and eliminating federal fiscal corruption. And there's plenty of it. Those who are politically savvy know that this corruption has been going on for quite some time, and it's really, really, really bad. But the general public is just waking up to it. Evil is being exposed, and that's a good thing. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 11, "Do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead even expose them." So this week, DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency under the leadership of Elon Musk, exposed what U.S. international aid was being spent on. Here is a list of some of the expenditures posted by the White House. $5 million to advance diversity, equity, and inclusion in Serbia's workplaces and business communities. $70,000 for a production of a DEI musical in Ireland. $2.5 million for electric vehicles in Vietnam, $47,000 for a transgender opera in Colombia, $32,000 for a transgender comic book in Peru, $2 million for sex changes and LGBT activism in Guatemala, $6 million to fund tourism in Egypt, and hundreds of thousands of dollars for nonprofits linked to designated terrorist organizations, millions to the Eco Health Alliance, which was involved in research at the Wuhan lab, hundreds of thousands of meals that went to Al-Qaeda-affiliated fighters in Syria, funding to print personalized contraceptive birth control devices in developing countries, also hundreds of millions of dollars to fund irrigation canals, farming equipment, and fertilizer to support the unprecedented poppy cultivation and heroin production in Afghanistan, benefiting the Taliban. Here's an article from Town Hall that breaks the spending down into seven major categories. First, homosexual and transgender spending. Second, DEI spending. Third, spending to promote illegal immigration. Fourth, global warming. Fifth, sexual health funding, abortion and contraceptives to stop overpopulation, then terrorism funding, and then the Eco Health Alliance, the Wuhan lab, gain of function research. Also, $270 million of U.S. aid went to George Soros' charity to fund the election of leftist prosecutors in the United States. So you wonder where the left is getting all their money. They're paying themselves out of the U.S. Treasury. USAID is being described as a slush fund for the Democrat Party. It's also being described as a racket. And the American public has been fed a false cover story. A cover story that was so pretentious that it took years before the public could react and challenge the lie, to quote Joe Rogan. Here's another new piece. Mapping NGO connections and tracking millions of government money. Fractal technology maps previously hidden connections between 55,000 leftist NGOs, revealing how tax dollars allegedly flow to them from major institutions like Vanguard and Morgan Stanley. This breakthrough tracking system can now monitor every dollar going to every NGO, exposing intricate funding webs that traditional tech could not detect. So these NGOs, non-governmental charities, organizations set up to receive and distribute U.S. government aid. And leftists have set up thousands of these front organizations to aid illegal immigration, abortion, LGBTQ. NGOs were funding and supplying the migrant caravans. It's all funded by USAID. This article is actually explaining how the money moves from organization to organization so that it cannot be tracked. Well, now that Kristi Noem is the head of Homeland Security, she revealed that NGOs were spending $1.4 billion annually to ship illegal immigrants into the United States. This was the agenda of the Democrat Party that I addressed last week. Also, it was revealed last week that USAID money was being spent to fund leftist news outlets, Politico, New York Times, AP Press. Politico has received $35 million from the government, and you can be sure not a single conservative news site received any federal funding. And this is how it works. Politico offers pro-subscription contracts so that government workers can get additional political articles. You know, just like you might subscribe to a VIP subscription on the Daily Wire or at PJ Media. Well, these government workers really don't need to access these Politico articles. But through this, Democrats were able to give money to their supporters in the media. This is absolute corruption. I mean, imagine if the left discovered that Trump was buying news from Fox at the tune of $35 million. And you know, this is another reminder that leftism and all ungodliness is parasitic. Universities, the media outlets, the leftist think tanks could not survive if they had to do real work for a living. They only survive by the power of government to tax. Now, this corruption in U.S. aid is not just the spending. It's also the workforce itself. The department employs about 10,000 people. Trump is cutting it down to 300. Exactly how this is going to work is a mystery. For now, it seems like these employees have been put on temporary leave. But think about this, 10,000 workers shuffling papers and handing out $60 billion every year in taxpayer money. When Elon Musk took over Twitter, he cut the workforce by 80% from 8,000 down to 1,800. And Twitter continues to run just fine. All it is a computer program that does all of the work. Well, the same amount of unnecessary employees likely exists also in government agencies. So this corruption in USAID is so vast, it would take me an entire program just to list and describe all of the misspent money. And this is not even to mention other government agencies, which are going to be looked at soon. I mean, it's now reported that Social Security gives out billions per year to people who don't qualify and who don't even have a Social Security number. Here is an interview with Elon Musk, quote, "Nobody in Treasury management cared enough before. I do want to credit the working level people in Treasury who have wanted to do this for many years, but have been stopped by prior management. Everything at Treasury was geared toward compliant minimization. People who receive money don't complain, but people who don't receive money, especially the fraudsters, complain very loudly. So the fraud was allowed to continue. It's ridiculous that these changes didn't already exist. Yesterday I was told that there are currently over $100 billion per year of entitlement payments to individuals with no Social Security number or even temporary ID number. If accurate, this is extremely suspicious. When I was asked if anyone at the Treasury had a rough guess for what percentage of that number is obvious fraud, the consensus in the room was about half, about $50 billion a year, or about $1 billion a week. This is utter insanity and must be addressed immediately," unquote, Elon Musk. And we all applaud and agree. Now, a very important part of this story is how the left is reacting to this exposure of corruption and all the cutbacks. But before we discuss that, we need to establish a biblical basis for the just and moral use of money. Because these reports are meaningless for millions of Americans who want to live off of government largesse. As far as they're concerned, what's wrong with handing out money? What's wrong with an easy job? I mean, what's wrong with supporting ideological causes? So again, we need to begin with a biblical moral understanding of what is financial corruption? What is the definition of freeloading off of the system? And again, for many Americans, they say, hey, if someone wants to pay me to do a job, it must be okay. Otherwise, nobody would be paying me. And here we're reminded of Paul's teaching in 1 Timothy chapter 6, where Paul points out that men of depraved minds suppose that godliness is a means of gain. The verse isn't strictly about religious offerings. It's referring to those who judge what is morally right and wrong based on the money they can get from it. If it can make money for them, then it must be righteous. And this is very similar to Micah chapter 2, verse 1, where the people were justifying financial corruption simply because it was in the power of their hand to do it. Might makes right. If I can do it and get away with it, it must be okay. hey, if the government wants to pay me six figures a year to rubber stamp checks to drag queen operas in Colombia, so what? As long as I get paid. So here's a question. What is our own integrity in regard to our employment? Would you take a comfortable government job if it came your way? Even if you knew that it was not essential? Even if you knew it was wasting taxpayers' money? That less people could do the same job? That you were expendable? Now, of course, there are plenty of government workers who are necessary. But there are a whole lot who are not, and they're bankrupting the system and really hurting the good workers. Are you familiar with Psalm 15? It's one of those convicting psalms that every Christian needs to know and live by. It begins, "Who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy hill?" It's asking, who are the ones who are going to be in heaven? Verse 2, "He who walks with integrity and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart." And then the text goes on to explain the behavior of those who walk in integrity. Verse 5, "He doesn't put out his money at interest, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent." In other words, he doesn't take money that doesn't belong to him, even if someone offers him the check. This involves having some moral discernment in regard to our employment. A parallel text would be Isaiah chapter 33, verse 15. "He who walks righteously and speaks with sincerity, he who rejects unjust gain and shakes his hand so that they hold no bribe." My favorite part of Psalm 15 is verse 4. "The righteous man makes a promise to his own hurt and he doesn't change." His integrity is such that he will do the right thing even if it hurts him, even if it costs him his job, his retirement, his 401k. How many Americans would turn down an unjust grant, job, or contract that would enrich them and make their lives easier? Very few, if any. Only those who abide on God's holy hill walk in financial integrity. And I've learned this from experience, that those who live by moral integrity financially will rarely become rich or upper middle class. Now, I could tell you many stories about growing up in my neighborhood in Northern Jersey and all the dads who had two Cadillacs in the driveway. We all knew that they were into corrupt business dealings, making living off of certain vices, government graft, monopolies. Not all, but most. Did you hear the story this week that the mayor of LA, Karen Bass, hired Steve Soboroff to lead a fire recovery effort in LA? He was being paid $500,000 for 90 days of work. The mayor said that this man was worth it. But once it was revealed to the public, the mayor reversed course on the compensation. But if nobody found out, it would have continued. All these reports in the news this week about government corruption and waste should cause us really to examine our own selves, our own work, rather than this being just all about them. You know, God intends in all this for us to examine our own ways. Well, I kind of got off track here. Let's return to the biblical basis or the definition of financial justice. It starts in Genesis, where God commands man to work by the sweat of his brow. And ever since that pronouncement, sinners have been trying to skirt around God's requirement, like in using the power of a monopoly or the power of government to tax, to not have to work by the sweat of one's brow. Remember the New Testament standard that Paul puts forth in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, where Paul writes, "We did not eat anyone's bread without paying for it. But with labor and hardship, we kept working night and day so that we would not be a burden to any." So Paul, in his integrity, wasn't going to burden anyone to pay him a salary. And then Paul goes on to give this standard. If anyone is not willing to work, then he is not to eat. There's to be no freeloading off of others. But those without a Christian worldview naturally have an entitlement attitude toward their support and their employment. The goal is to get paid the most for the least amount of work. And landing that kind of job is like winning the lottery. But not so for a Christian. Remember when Congresswoman AOC said that after the corona crisis that people should protest and not go back to work if they were not getting paid enough? She also suggested that the government should hire everyone who is underemployed and give them a living wage. You know, the problem is really not the nuances of her statement. The problem is her attitude toward work. And this is what we see in many people today. A despising of the Genesis chapter 3 command to work and a feeling of entitlement. And these people get offended if they get laid off. But on the other hand, Christians rejoice. If we're not being useful and needed in our employment, we want to move on to a different place where we can produce legitimate goods and services for others, to be in a place where people freely pay for our services, not where we force people by taxation or by any other means. But you say, wait a minute, Pastor Brad, who thinks that way? Well, Psalm chapter 15, he who walks in integrity and works righteousness. Now, moving on from the simple command to work in Genesis, we also have the Mosaic Law, the Old Covenant, God's standards of righteousness. And the law of God contains laws against financial corruption, specifically what's called the sin of exploitation. Now, one can certainly hire a worker, but the employer is not to exploit the employee, and the employee is not to exploit the employer, or the public for that matter. Exploitation is the unjust use of others for personal gain. It's a violation of justice and love for one's neighbor. And there are verses such as Leviticus 19:13, you shall not oppress your neighbor nor rob him. Exodus 18:21, select men of truth who hate dishonest gain. Exodus 23:8, you shall not take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the clear-sighted and subverts the cause of the just. And Deuteronomy 16:19, you shall not distort justice, you shall not be partial. You shall not take a bribe. A bribe is taking payment to do the wrong thing or to receive payment from an unjust source. And also, how about the eighth commandment? Thou shalt not steal. One should not take any money from others by force. Like the prophet John said to the Roman soldiers, do not take money from anyone by force and be content with your wages. But wait a minute, all taxation comes by force from the government. How can any government employee accept their paycheck? Well, this is where governments have to be completely within the confines of what God calls government to do. Otherwise, everyone involved in that government is guilty before God of unjust gain. There can be situations where a bureaucratic aristocracy lives easy lives off of their power to tax the peasants. And so that whole government and everyone who works for it is guilty. Woe be to those who live unjustly off of the wealth of others. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 9. Woe to him who gets evil gain for his house, to put his nest on high, to be delivered from the hand of calamity. Ezekiel 22, behold then, I smite my hand at your dishonest gain, which you have acquired. Now, as we move on from the law of Moses to the prophets, remember that the prophets were God's prosecutors of the law, and they railed against Israel's financial corruption, When a nation departs from God, one of the first things to go is financial integrity. And I suppose the reason for that is the sinner operates on his own law, whatever helps him, rather than the higher laws of God. And when one is not living for God, the only other thing to live for is money. So they become lovers of money rather than lovers of God. Now, we could go through all of the texts and the prophets that deal with the financial corruption in Israel. There's so many. Every prophet has something to say about it. But do you know the name of the main Old Testament prophet who addressed the most Israel's financial corruption? Always remember the name Amos. His contemporary was Isaiah. Isaiah was a statesman prophet, but Amos was a commoner, a farmer. And God used Amos's perspective to point out the economic sins of Israel, the perspective of the working class who are being hurt the most. And Amos's rebuke was not what is often described by leftist religious groups, that the government wasn't giving out enough money to the poor. But his rebuke was that the governing authorities themselves were bloated and enriching themselves at the expense of the workers, taking money from the workers and passing it out to their government friends. Here are some key texts in the book of Amos. Amos chapter 2, "Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Israel and for four I will not revoke its punishment, because they sell the righteous for money and the needy for a pair of sandals. These who pant after the very dust of the earth on the heads of the helpless also turn aside the way of the humble." Amos chapter 4, "Hear the words, hear this word, you cows of Bashan, who are on the mount of Samaria, who oppress the poor, who crush the needy, who say to your husbands, bring now that we may drink." The cows were describing the rich women in Israel, the elite, who, like the rich man in Luke chapter 16, was faring sumptuously every day. Amos chapter 5, "They hate him who reproves in the gate, and they abhor him who speaks with integrity. Therefore, because you impose heavy rent on the poor and exact a tribute of grain from them, though you have built houses of well-hewn stone, yet you will not live in them. You have planted pleasant vineyards, yet you will not drink their wine. For I know your transgressions, they're many, and your sins are great. You who distress the righteous and accept bribes and turn aside the poor in the gate. Therefore, at such a time, the prudent person keeps silent, for it's an evil time." So there we see the financial corruption. But notice how the people who are living off of the graft hated those who reproved them. They reproved in the gate. The gate is the place of political discussion. It was the court. And notice the cancel culture. In an evil time, one has to keep silent because they're going to ruin you if you threaten their funding. Does this sound familiar? It's how the left is now reacting to all of the audits in the federal government. Amos chapter 7, verse 10. Amos is actually indicted. And one of the priests says that the land is unable to endure all of Amos's words. So they attack the messenger, not the evil he's addressing. Amos chapter 6, verse 1. "Woe to those who are at ease in Zion, and to those who feel secure in the mountain of Samaria, the distinguished men of the foremost of nations to whom the house of Israel comes." And Amos chapter 6, verse 4. "Those who recline on beds of ivory and sprawl on their couches and eat lambs from the flock and calves from the midst of the stall." So these are the rich, and they have made their riches by taxing the people. It reminds us of the book of Ezekiel, where a distinction is made between the fat sheep, the rich, and the lean sheep, the workers. Ezekiel chapter 34, verse 20, "Behold, I will judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep, because you push with side and with shoulder and thrust out all of the weak with your horns until you have scattered them abroad." So let me just encourage you to read the book of Amos this week. Now let's look at the response from leftist, statist media and politicians like Amos, they hate him who reproves in the gate. They're unable to endure the words. And a key verse that we should keep in mind over the next 4 years throughout all of Trump's reforms is Proverbs chapter 21, verse 15. The exercise of justice is joy for the righteous, but it's a terror for the workers of iniquity. Of course, the workers of iniquity are going to call the exercise of justice injustice. At least it's injustice for them because it threatens their power. So here are a few stories. First, 19 Democrats have filed suit against Elon Musk for looking into the finances at the Treasury Department. This was undertaken by the far-left Attorney General of New York, Letitia James, who said President Trump doesn't have the power to have the agencies in his administration audited. But this is not going to hold up in court. The President of the United States is in charge of these agencies, and he has every constitutional right to hire an audit company to investigate corruption. Even the Secretary of Treasury wants these audits. These Democrats are basically saying that the president has no right to investigate corruption in government. And in this, Democrats are describing the DOGE audits as a constitutional crisis, that this is a breach in national security, that Trump is seizing power for corrupt purposes, that this is chaos and confusion. I even noticed that on the ABC Evening News, in talking about the DOGE audits, they didn't say a word about the financial corruption that was disclosed. But they showed pictures of starving children in Africa receiving food from USAID. See, they're throwing every possible pejorative and lie at these financial audits, hoping that something might stick, but it's not working too well. It's actually backfiring. The more these politicians and the media push back, the more the public sees these politicians and the media as corrupt. The politicians and the media wouldn't be reacting this way if they didn't have something to hide. Here's another article, Daily Caller. Democrats are realizing fighting Trump's dismantling of USAID is a losing battle. And the article states that some Democrat strategists urge caution and have told their colleagues to think twice about whether to defend foreign aid and USAID employees. Is it the right hill to die on for a party that's struggling with working class voters and those in middle America? And the article goes on to explain that Republicans actually want Democrats to fight them on this. Because the more the Democrats do, the more the Democrats lose votes. Here's another article. Democrat Party insiders say that the level of panic over President Trump and Elon Musk's DOGE freezing all USAID spending is unlike anything they've ever seen. By following the money, DOGE has struck a killing blow to the heart of the Democrat deep state machine. Based on the reaction from within the party, it seems to me that dismantling USAID is Trump's biggest political victory to date. It was his enemy's golden goose. Initial plans by the Democrats is to have their people at USAID hide the partisan funding under unimpeachable initiatives. They will push back really hard on certain line items that on their face look like reasonable USAID expenditures and yet hide their political spending under these programs. Another likely solution for Democrats, which they already use to reward VIPs, is to use NGOs as an intermediary to direct funds where they want them to go. So basically, USAID allocates funds for certain initiatives that look reasonable. Eventually, the funds reach the secret intended target. This means they can continue to rinse, repeat, and grift. So we understand why the Democrats are responding this way. The Democrats were using government money illegally to fund their party agenda. And it's really interesting that Democrat politicians don't want to talk about the actual corruption that's been unearthed. but only about the evil, the supposed evil of Doge investigating the corruption. Kind of reminds me of like parents who find marijuana in the room of their teenager. And the teen's only argument is that the parents have no right to search through his or her room. You know, this is the reaction of those who are guilty and have no argument. Now, as far as government workers, they're also in a panic. Over the past 25 years, Washington, D.C. has boomed. It's the richest section in the country, living off the rest of the country, and now it's being threatened by downsizing. The party is coming to an end. Luke chapter 15, when the prodigal ran out of money, he had to go feed the swine. Here's an article that describes a response from a worker at USAID who resigned. And I find her response quite amazing. She said, "Musk is lining his own pocket and ripping off Americans across the country who depend upon government services to live with dignity." Did she actually see what was being cut? I really think this woman and many Democrats actually believe living with dignity is for the federal government to pay $70,000 for the production of a DEI musical in Ireland, or $47,000 for a transgender opera in Colombia. After all, these are the people who secured and approved these U.S. aid expenditures. Aren't we just, it's just really fascinating the way these people think. What they call dignity, the rest of the public calls being a freeloader. These Democrats reject the philosophy of small government. As far as they're concerned, it would be much fairer if everybody worked for government. For them, charity is to have everybody work for government, and everyone should have an easy life of just shuffling papers. I mean, why deny people security and comfort? And they're claiming that the right is actually terrorizing these government workers. You know, it's just a whole different mindset than the political rights perspective of personal responsibility, accountability, and work. But who's right? Well, it just takes an overall understanding of biblical morality and the Christian work ethic. Finally, what is the end of those who live secure and large as a bureaucratic class? Well, back to the book of Amos. It doesn't end well. It doesn't sound very pretty. Amos chapter 2, verse 5, "I will send fire upon Judah and consume the citadels of Jerusalem." Amos 3:11, "I will pull down your strength from you and your citadels will be looted." Amos chapter 4, verse 2, "They will take you away with meat hooks." Amos chapter 4, verse 10, "I will overthrow you as Sodom and Gomorrah. Prepare to meet your God, O Israel." Amos chapter 6, verse 7, "Therefore they will go into exile, and the sprawlers banqueting will pass away." Amos chapter 8, verse 8, "Behold, the eyes of the Lord are on the sinful kingdom, and I will destroy it from the face of the earth." And to quote the New Testament, the words of the rich man in hell, Luke chapter 16, "The rich man cried out and said, 'Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus so that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool off my tongue, for I am in agony in this flame.' But Abraham said, 'Child, remember that during your life you received your good things, likewise Lazarus' bad things. But now he is being comforted, and here you are in agony.'" So there's no small punishment to exploit others, to steal wealth from others. Thanks for listening. Subscribe, like, share, leave a comment below. Don't forget to stay in the Word. And remember, this week, read the book of Amos. And may Jesus Christ reign.